very foolish. They'd say, oh, you've done so much service for Srila Prabhupada. I said, no, specifically with regard to the Soviet Union. I said, no, Srila Prabhupada did it. And they'd say, well, Srila Prabhupada did it through you. I said, no, Srila Prabhupada did it in spite of me. So I think that's kind of how we all feel. So Mandakini, she was personally deputed. Okay. She was personally sent by Srila Prabhupada to Moscow with a special mission in mind. So she's going to start by talking about that and explaining that and what she encountered. And Haripu just got a book here of pictures and little captions. And we've also got some other things that we'll pass around, but they come kind of at a later part of the story.
Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasaya Vidhi Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Chinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nivise Sashunyavani Prashatyade Shatarine Vacha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadar Shiva Sarigor Bhakta Vrinda Vancha Karpata Rubhyasha Kripa Sindhubhya Ivacha Patitanam, Pavanibhyo, Vaishnavibhyo, Namo Namaha. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram. Dear devotees, I feel so honored again to be amongst all of you and to be speaking especially with my very dear God brother and God sister, Ami Pucha, Devidasi, and Kirtiraj Prabhu. Actually, they did so much for the Russian Yatra. So I'm really happy to be able to hear them. So I will tell my little story and then we can hear them. For me, everything started in 71. I was a pujari, as I was telling last time, in Radha Londonishvara temple in London. And serving the deities, I'd been already in the temple for 2 years. I was 21 at this time. And Srila Prabhupada was very often coming to London. At one point, I felt the desire to do a little preaching. And at the same time, I read in one of Srila Prabhupada's purport that if actually you see your spiritual master, and if he's asking you to do a task a little difficult, and then you can right away tell him yes, then you will make some spiritual progress in your spiritual life. So being a pujari and knowing that Shishri Radha Londonishvara were really persons, I just rushed to them, I ran, and I asked them, my dear Lord, can you make some arrangements? Can you arrange that Srila Prabhupada will ask me to do a little difficult task, and please, please, help me to remember to say yes. And then I forgot about it. And meanwhile, we heard that Srila Prabhupada was in Russia. It was in 71. We did not know much about it. We just heard about the Cold War and the Iron Curtain. And I thought, Srila Prabhupada is so brave. He has no fear whatsoever. And certainly a country I will never go. And then Srila Prabhupada came to London. Later on, we heard that Shyamasundar Prabhu had actually arranged for Srila Prabhupada to get a visa. Shyamasundar wrote a letter to Professor Katovsky. And he said in the letter, our spiritual master, my teacher, Esi Bhaktivedanta Swami, would like very much to visit you at the university. Professor Katovsky was the head of the Asian department. And he was a very polite gentleman. So he wrote a very nice letter. It was not really an invitation, but it was very polite, saying, yes, your teacher, if your teacher come, I will be happy to meet him. Although it was not a proper invitation, it was enough for Shyamasundar to arrange a visa for Srila Prabhupada, for him, and for a servant named Aravinda. So they came, and Prabhupada talked to Professor Katovsky. It was a very nice conversation about Vanashram Dharma. Srila Prabhupada explained how even Russia, the Soviet Union, who was actually a communist country, couldn't have a classless society. And he actually convinced Professor Katovsky, who made a very nice article for the university. But then when Srila Prabhupada asked, can I meet the students? Professor Katovsky replied, actually no students are here today. And he said, can I meet the teachers? No teachers were there. And no sweeper was there. Professor Katovsky was so afraid that he chose a day when nobody would be there. So at that time, Srila Prabhupada was really disappointed because he wanted to meet the youth. And he knew he had the experiment in America or in Europe that actually the youth was taking up Krishna consciousness. And he couldn't meet anyone. As the first Russian devotee told me later, the Russian people were not allowed to approach. They were not allowed to approach a foreigner. They could be taken to the police station. Square. And he already had the vision of what would happen later on. He said, passing by the tomb of Lenin, this is not going to last more than 20 years. And then he said again, the Russians are the greatest taste. So we didn't know that. But then when Srila Prabhupada came back from Russia, we didn't know anything what had happened during these 5 days. Shyamasundar actually was feeling very sorry for Srila Prabhupada. He could see Srila Prabhupada, being so not happy not to meet the youth. So he prayed to Lord Krishna, please arrange something. And then he went to buy some milk or vegetable at the grocery store. And one young boy approached him. That young boy asked him, are you coming from India? So Shyamasundar was in dhoti, and he had tilak and a shaved head. And he said, no, I'm not coming from India, but my spiritual master is coming from India. Would you like to meet my spiritual master? And the young boy said, yes, I'm very interested. I'm studying philosophy at the university, and I read a lot of books about Indian philosophy. So that boy, his name was Anatoly, was brought to Srila Prabhupada. And for 2 days, Srila Prabhupada just gave him so much, information and really told him about Krishna consciousness. The boy asked how he could spread Krishna consciousness in Russia. He asked him if he could become a pope, an orthodox pope, to spread Krishna consciousness. And then Srila Prabhupada said, it's not necessary. He told him about Varnashram Dharma. He told him that, like he told Professor Katovsky, that even in Russia, the society was not classless. And then Anatoly said, actually, it would help me a lot if I could get a Western wife, I would probably be protected and could do more. So all of us, we did not know anything about it. It was kept very secret. But we heard Srila Prabhupada was in Russia. He came to Paris first, then he came to London. And when he came to London, one day, somebody told me, Mandakini, Srila Prabhupada wants to talk to you. Come upstairs. Then I was a little nervous because I was doing some menial service and I thought I made some mistake probably, like I often did. And then I went, I knocked on the door, and then Srila Prabhupada, I heard his voice saying, come in. So I came and he was so beautifully sitting behind a chair in this room in Bury Place. The wooden floor, Aditi was there also, I think, at that time. So correct me if my memory is not correct, but I remember some wood painted in blue and the walls being peach color. And I was told Prabhupada liked these colors because it was the same colors he had when he was a child in his room in Calcutta. So he said, come closer. I came, Shyama Sundar was there. And he asked in a very normal tone, like always it struck me, it was so normal, it was like he would ask me to get some ghee or potatoes across the street. He said, Mandakini, would you like to marry this boy, Anatoly, and go to Russia? And by the grace of the Lord, help to spread the movement of Lord Chaitanya there. And I was struck because I didn't want to get married at the time. So I looked at him and in a second I remembered my prayers. And I told him, yes, Srila Prabhupada. So he smiled and he told Shyama Sundar, you arrange everything, you know, the best way to go. And then that wonderful saga started. I started to have some. We didn't have computers at the time, but we had tape recorder. So I started to try to learn Russian outside of Prabhupada's door. And time came to actually go and get a visa in France. So it was. What was strange at the time was that we didn't tell anybody about it, but some Russian people started to come to the London Temple and then to the Paris Temple and asking a strange question. So the first time I went as a tourist and I had to dress in civil clothes. And the idea of our tourist tour was actually to go and watch the Bolshoi theater dancers, the ballet. So I remember coming to Moscow. It was all gray, black and white, and people were looking very sad and not looking at each other, looking fearful, only one or two cars in the big avenues. Then I came with a group, and Shyama Sundar told, don't take any beads, don't take any books, be very discreet, and especially with the tourist guide, because she will be reporting any strange behavior to the KGB. So she started asking what we wanted to have for dinner. And she was proposing all kind of menu with meat, fish, eggs. And although I wanted to be discreet, I was the only one left at the end. And everybody started looking, and the tourist guide also. And I had to say I'm a vegetarian. Then I thought I blew it. I didn't start, but it's already finished. I came up and I saw on the stairs just near the room that tall young boy looking very stern and asking me if I was Monique, that was my civil name. And I thought he was KGB because he looked so severe. He had a very severe look on his face. And I say, yes, it's me. And I thought, it's Dana. I'm discovered, you know. And then he said, I'm Anatoly. It was the Russian boy. So we went in the room of the hotel, and he looked at all the plugs, and he told me some mics. We should just go out. So then, to make things a little short, I was actually every time I went to Russia trying to get a residential permit visa, because Prabhupada wanted me to stay there to help, but they never gave me that residential visa to stay longer than 1 week or 2 weeks. So every time we used to invite people in the small room, Anatoly, who became Ananta Shanti, was receiving some friends, or we used to go to them very discreetly. And then it was very simple program, but very blissful, cooking prasadam. First getting the vegetables. It was only cabbage, carrots, potatoes. But it was very, very wonderful prasadam. Then I showed Anatoly how to cook, how to offer it to Krishna, how to have kirtan, how to speak from Bhagavad Gita. And Krishna was really, really helping us. So at one point, we got legally married, although it was quite difficult because the Kishibi tried to steal his papers, but he was quite clever, so he managed to keep the papers. And time came to go to the town hall. He got two witnesses from the street, and we went to in front of the officer in the town hall, and he told me when to say yes, da, you know, and then I became Mrs. Pinayev. We got married, but still I could never get the visa. So I went for about maybe 5 years, two or three times a year, but nothing was coming. And after some time, Srila Prabhupada told that maybe it's no use to go anymore, you know, if you don't get the residential visa. So meanwhile, I can just tell the little story about the first books which came to Russia. So the first one was actually by the mercy of Malati Prabhu. Maybe a lot of you have met Malati. She probably came here, and she was very disobedient. But that time it was so wonderful. When Srila Prabhupada went to Moscow, she thought it cannot be. You know, they don't want to bring any books. It's not possible. So without telling her husband, Shyama Sundar, or without telling Prabhupada, she put a Bhagavad Gita in the suitcase. So when they came before the officer of immigration, he told them, open the suitcase. Then Shyama Sundar gave the suitcase, and the officer dropped it on the floor. And it was open, and everything was on the floor. And the blue, little blue pocket Bhagavad Gita was on the floor. And Shyama Sundar became all white, you know. He thought, oh no, it's not possible. But the man, the officer, felt so ashamed to have dropped the suitcase that he didn't pay attention to the Bhagavad Gita. He closed the suitcase and he gave it back. And it was the first book that came to Russia, the Bhagavad Gita. And as we know, they people were so eager at that time for spiritual life, they were ready to give their life, their health, to go to prison or to camp, just for spiritual life. So this Bhagavad Gita was given for one night to someone who was actually in the beginning copying the Bhagavad Gita by hand. The second book, it was Srimad Bhagavatam. There was a new edition of Srimad Bhagavatam with the blue cover, two volumes for the first canto. And Shyamasundar said, bring them to Moscow. And I thought it would be easier by train, probably. Maybe I won't get in trouble. Then the train took 3 days and 2 nights from Paris. And I started talking to one lady, a French lady, and she told me, I hope you don't have any religious books, especially, you know, Bible or any religious books, because the militias are getting mad if you bring religious books. And I looked at her and I said, it's okay, no, it's okay. But then I was worrying what to do. Then before I could think of a way to hide them, she said, actually, it's impossible to hide them anywhere. You cannot hide them under the beds, or you cannot hide them in your suitcase, because they will look everywhere. And I became a little bit worried. And then I thought, okay, I cannot do anything. I have no intelligence. So please, Krishna, you're so bright. You want these books to go. And you're so intelligent. So you can arrange that this Srimad Bhagavatam, they go to Moscow. Please help, because I'm useless. Then I saw an Indian gentleman. And looking at him, I thought maybe it won't look so strange if it is in his suitcase, because it will come from India. So I should try to approach him and ask him. I started some small talk, and his wife came. They were extremely nice. And he asked me, do you have any friends in Moscow? I said, yes, there is a Russian friend. And there is also an Indian friend. He says, oh, an Indian friend? What is his name? And I told the name. His name was Madhukar Tandon. And he looked really surprised. Then he said, really, this is actually the son of my boss. So I started becoming very ecstatic, you know. And I thought, Krishna, you're so clever. You have arranged everything. Because Madhukar's father actually had a very high post in the Indian embassy. And we know that the diplomats, they have a diplomatic suitcase. And the diplomatic suitcase, it's like India itself. No policeman or whoever cannot just open that suitcase. So I looked at that gentleman and I said, oh, maybe you can help me. You know, I have some books about the philosophy of India. And you know, the militias are really mean. Could you kindly take these books in your diplomatic suitcase? Because it's a gift for the son of your boss. And he says, oh, with great pleasure. And, so he opened the suitcase, he put the Srimad Bhagavatam in the suitcase, then he locked it. And he was going for a few days in Poland. And then when the militias came, they really looked mean. And they looked, it was true, they looked everywhere. No hiding place. But in my heart, I was feeling so joyful. And I try not to laugh or not to... But I thought, Krishna, you know, I tricked you. And I try not to smile. And I thought of that beautiful verse, the Bhagavad Purana. No, actually, when Lord Krishna left the planet, he will appear as his literary incarnation, the Bhagavad Purana. And that Srimad Bhagavatam is more brilliant than thousands of suns, and it will dissipate the darkness of Kali. And I thought it will give colors to Russia, because Russia was black and white. And coming back to Russia 40 years later, I saw so many colors and people smiling, no fear on the face of people. So this Krishna consciousness and this Bhagavad Purana really did change the darkness of the former Soviet Union. So I tried to get my permit for about 5-6 years, but then it was not possible anymore. So my mission stopped at that point for many, many years. But we have really some heroes who did a lot of service, and we're so lucky to have two of them here. So now they are going to talk about real work.
Okay. Thank you. Hare Krishna. As I said in the beginning, this service that we all managed to be a part of in the former Soviet Union was really all done, not only started, but all done throughout the years by Srila Prabhupada directly. And, you know, sometimes we say things, oh, by Krishna's mercy, oh, by Srila Prabhupada's mercy. Believe me, this is not, what's that word? Lip service. It's not just saying that. I mean, it is really true. One overview is where there's a will, there's a way. Somehow or other, I wrote Srila Prabhupada, I forget exactly how it started. Oh, there was one devotee, his name was Dwarkesh. He's a Hungarian devotee. He later became known as Bhakti Dayal Swami. And he was originally from Hungary, and he spoke very bad Russian. But of course, because none of us knew any Russian, we thought, oh, he's fluent in Russian. And he was so, quote unquote, fluent in Russian, he translated Srila Prabhupada's book, Easy Journey to Other Planets. Easy Journey to Other Planets. And the Russian was so bad. Even the title was bad. But it is amazing that how many people who got that book and became enlivened and became inspired in Krishna consciousness and became devotees. So he lived in Europe, and through the North European BBT organized by then Hari Kesh Maharaj, they printed this Easy Journey to Other Planets in Russian. And I arranged to get, or arranged for them to get me to L.A. We lived in L.A. at the time, furthest place you could be from Russia. And so he sent a whole big box of these Russian Easy Journey to Other Planets. And I had an idea that there are ships that came, Soviet ships that came into the Long Beach Pier in Southern California. And so Hari Puja would bake cookies. I'd take a book bag with these Russian Easy Journey to Other Planets. I'd take some incense. And I mean, I don't know. I have no idea what these people thought when I walked up on a Soviet ship up the gangplank and said, in my very, very, very broken Russian, I'd say hello. And I'd get about that far. Hello. And then I'd ask them if I could have a tour of their, Здравствуйте. Hello. Ask them if I could have a tour of this unbelievable ship that looked so interesting. I've never seen anything like it before. So it was like, this was just a guard at the top of the gangplank. And it was like, he never had such a request before. So he went and asked the boss. And he said, yes, you can have a tour, and they sent somebody. That person's usually called the Politruk, the kind of like the guard, the KGB, the spy, the guy who is responsible to find out what's going on and to report it. And so he'd take me on a tour. And actually, he wouldn't take me on a tour. He'd take me, my wife, and my little daughter on a tour. And again, when we walk up, it was like, what's going on here? Sometimes I'd go alone on the ship. Sometimes I'd manage to get Hari Pooja. She was always scared that we'd never get off the ship. But so they'd take us on a tour. And while he was leading the way on the tour, I would take a book out of my bag and keep it in my pocket. And then he'd show me, and I'd say, oh, very interesting, when he had his back turned. And I'd leave a book, sometimes behind the radar unit, sometimes, you know, we'd go to the library, and I'd look at the books, and I'd take one book off the shelf, and I'd put two back on. And it worked great. I mean, every ship, you know, we managed to leave books. One time I was caught by the guy, the big shot on the ship, and he got so mad, it was unbelievable, and he's holding the Easy Journey Tummy Plants in his hand, and he's trembling and shaking. And he says, okay, thank you, goodbye. And then also an interesting thing, there are so many stories, it's unbelievable, bear with me. there are pallets in the parking lot, the staging area, in the docks. And I'd go over, and there were no big, heavy security. Once you were there, you were there. And I'd see, oh, this pallet's going to the Soviet Union. It's addressed Moscow, somewhere, USSR, CCCP, which is Russian Cyrillic for USSR. So I had a knife with me, and I'd slit open the plastic on these pallets and put in some books. And I'd go, and I'd, you know, just walk around, find another pallet, and so going to Russia, I'd slit it and put in books, and then I'd leave. Because one of the biggest things that we capitalized on was, I guess, corruptness and the Soviet people being interested in tasting the forbidden fruit. So we even saw, I mean, devotees would smuggle books in and put them and then walk away and watch. And Labunga Latika from England, who's in India now, she used to go and she would smuggle. She'd go on her way to India through Russia. And she'd stop in Moscow, and she said to me once, can I leave books in the bathroom? I said, leave books wherever you want to leave them, and somebody will get them. And she left one time Russian Bhagavad Gita in the bathroom in the Moscow airport, and she stood back, and she saw somebody walked out, and they went like this, and then stuck the book under her coat and took off. So that was the greatest thing we had. that to take advantage of, to utilize, that people wanted that which they could not have, and that which they knew they should not have. There's one, years and years and years later, I got a transcript from, oh, don't ask me years, 64, that's how. I don't remember years. That was 32 or 33 years ago. And the only reason I could remember this is because we've been here for 25 years. We lived in Sweden for 10 years. So somewhere before, right after we got to Sweden, we were doing it. And so like 32 years ago or something. So, no. No, it's really like 32 years ago.
When you went on the ship in LA, when was that?
That was...
That's what
I'm... Oh, the ship in L.A. was... Well, see, I mixed up stories here. The going mostly on the ships and cutting the pallets was when we lived in Sweden. Right. So that was 32 years ago.
The tour, why? That was in the 70s.
1975, 76. Yeah. It was 1975. We went to Poland with our one-year-old daughter. So... There was I got a report, a transcription Harisari Prabhu sent me from one Russian devotee who told the story that his father worked on a ship and he found one of these books and he brought it home and he gave it to his son. And his son became an initiated devotee. So it worked, you know. I'm really jumping all over the place. When we lived, I guess I should back up to the book fair. In 1978, we lived in L.A., and I had so much fun going to the Soviet ships and distributing books. I thought, there's, you know, there's a whole country over there that takes up one-sixth of the world's total landmass. I'm putzing around with, you know, a ship full of people in L.A. I might as well try to go to Russia. So I found out about the 1979 Moscow Book Fair, which was the second one. The first one was 1977, where Gopal Krishna Maharaj, Pritaputra Maharaj, and Bhugarbha Puru went representing the BBT from India. So I got some information from them, and I contacted the Mezhdur Nuranaya Kniga, the international book fair people in Moscow, and they gave me permission, and I got a visa, and it was like, oh my God, I'm going to Moscow. And so I packed up a complete set. I worked for the BBT mail order department at that time. I packed up a complete set of Prabhupada's books, took them in a suitcase, and went to Moscow for the Moscow Book Fair, which was an unbelievable experience. Devotees from all over the country, probably 25, 30 devotees, came to Moscow to attend the book fair, I mean, to attend our stand at the book fair. And the first day, I had an idea. I said, excuse me for when I say I, but it's like, you know, I mean, it's by Prabhupada's grace. It's not just, you know, I and me. It's by Prabhupada's grace. But this idea entered into my head that we should be distributing prasadam here, that all these people are coming, and so many people are coming to our book fair, book stand, because we have books about India. India and the Soviet Union were like this. They were the closest of friends, economically, defense-wise, friendship exchange. So we really also took advantage of whatever we could and whoever we could, and to get Prabhupada's books in and to spread Krishna consciousness there. I said, we should be distributing some kind of prasadam. So I said, what's available? Like Mandy King said, I mean, there's nothing available at that time. That was 1979. There was really, truly almost no food available. Russian devotees who are young, they have no idea what it was like in the 70s when there was like nothing to eat. And like she said, gray, black, and white, and brown. Those were the colors. It could have been their official colors. And so they said, well, we can get powdered milk. And I said, really? And I said, yeah. They said we could get powdered sugar. Well, we talked about a sweet, a ball, some kind of. And I said, what can we get to make these little sweet balls called Simply Wonderfuls? And they said, powdered milk, powdered sugar, and butter. I said, buy up whatever you can. So what we did is, again, some idea came that I took a whole bunch of BBT order forms that the Library Party used to use in America and India when they went to colleges and universities. So it had all of Prabhupada's books listed and prices in dollars. So people would say, can I buy these books? We said, no, this is our display copy, but here's an order form. You can order them, and you can pay for them now, and then we'll ship them to you from Bombay, because we thought from India, you know, they'll get them. So so they paid. I mean, we had so much money. It was unbelievable. By probably to the tune of like $4,000 in rubles in Soviet Russian currency. But still, that's what you pay for powdered milk, powdered sugar and butter with is rubles. So they went and they would buy whatever they could in the store, and the store had no more. So every night, the devotees from that first night on, they would come home and they would roll Simply Wonderfuls about that big, you know, like bigger, like three times the size of a pencil eraser. And that, you know, don't complain you didn't get enough, you know. And they would roll these sweet balls and they'd put them in these brown little paper sacks that were like this big, that the powdered sugar and powdered milk came in. And they would come in the morning and they said, Prabhu, we rolled all night. Look at our hands. And the tips of their fingers were blistered. I mean, really blistered. I mean, they rolled all night long. They rolled sweet balls and delivered them in the morning. And everybody loved it. Everybody. We distributed more than 26,000 pieces of prasadam. And it was, they were so enthusiastic to get prasadam that they would take a we would take a piece of paper and we'd probably tear it into like maybe like 9 or 12 pieces, and we would scoop up the crumbs from the bottom of the bag and we'd be handing prasadam to these people, just crumb prasadam. And I don't think anybody in the world has done that since or before. And they were, so they were standing there going like this with the crumbs of prasadam, and they were in ecstasy. And one of the KGB, you could tell them a mile away, one of the KGB men came and he said, and we simultaneously had a cassette tape playing really loud. You could hear it from, the hall where we were, because it was many halls in this big complex, the Park of Economic Achievement. And there were three buildings, and we were in one of the three buildings in one corner. And you could hear it, like from here, maybe like almost to the ladies' ashram. That's how big the hall was. And you could hear our tape playing. And one of these KGB guys came over and said, what is this? This is too loud. I said, okay, we'll turn it down a little bit. He turned it down like one click. And he said, you're handing out food? People are afraid it's poison. I said, well, not the people who are eating it are afraid. And I said, would you like some? He said, yeah, sure. And gave him some. And it was always like that. Always like that. And so we shipped. So then I sent all these orders to Gopal Krishnamaraj, and the BBT in Bombay sent them, and everybody got their books. Everything went through. And we send them registered mail and everything, but Gopal Krishnamaraj was a incredible assistance in this, even though, it wasn't his zone or, but he was just very, very, so very helpful. That's not to shortchange the credit due to Hari Keshmaraj, who, bankrolled this program for like 10 years or more with printing Russian language books for free, no cost. I mean, I'd say to him, I need 50,000 more books. He said, all right, give us a month. We'll have them. And he printed 50,000 Bhagavad Gita. Gopal Krishnamaraj did the same thing, printed 50,000 in Bombay. And we just managed to find, Krishna would just drop these people in our laps. There was an Afghani, four brothers in Junpat in Delhi, and they were brass dealers. And somehow, I guess we were there. Krishnadas Kaviraj was my partner in India, who kept everything going in India. And Dumrakesh Prabhu was lived with us for years in Sweden and did so much, incredible amounts of work with our demonstrations, which I'll mention. And so these Afghani brothers, we saw one day that there were Russians. Again, you could tell them a mile away, Soviet citizens and Russians, especially in India. And these guys were at their stand. So we went up to him, Krishnadas and I went up to him and said, we have this Bhagavad Gita. These are Afghani guys, not Hindus. And we said, we have these Bhagavad Gitas in Russian. And we see that Russians are coming. They said, so many Russians come to our shop. I said, can we leave some with you and you give them to them when they come? They said, of course, we're happy to. So they were one of our biggest distributors in India. Another big distributor was a leather goods dealer in Chanakyapuri, which is the embassy area in Delhi. And it was a big Soviet embassy. There were so many Soviet people, in India, because they used to have USSR bookhouses, where in all the major cities they had these bookstores that were all Soviet books. There would be, things about India but in Russian, or things about Russia in Hindi. I mean, it was just a big exchange like that. They had a magazine, Soviet Life that was given out for free, big glossy like Life magazine, given out and sent by subscription for free to anybody in India. So these leather goods dealers, jackets and coats and bags and shoes, we saw that all the Soviet citizens, when they came to Delhi, they went to these guys to buy clothes and shoes. So we said the same thing to them. They were Indians. We said, would you? And they said, of course we would. So, I mean, thousands of books, both of these guys distributed. And they were like, you know, so happy to help. And after the Moscow Book Fair, a lady approached me and said, what are you going to do with all these books you have on display here? And I said, why do you ask? Because I didn't want to take them home, of course. I wanted to leave them there. She said, well, I'm with the Lenin Library, the main library. She gave me her card. She said, would you donate them to us? And so you could only do, and that was not, you know, yeah, it's like, boy, does she have nerve. No, but that's one of the official things. You could either take them home with you or donate them to a Soviet institution. So he said, yes, of course we'll donate them to you. So she wrote a real nice letter afterwards, the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, thanking us for the donation. And I, in my enthusiasm, I had called back to the BBT and I said, send me a dozen Bhagavad Gitas, quick. So they sent a dozen Bhagavad Gitas to Moscow. They air freighted them, but they came after I left. So I said, oh man, now what am I going to do? So I went back to LA and called up and arranged with the book fair people and the Soviet customs that if I came, they would give me the books. So I said, I really don't want them. I want to leave them there. So I went and again, you know, the BBT, the North European BBT paid for me to go. And I got there and met with the devotees. And then I went with Ananta Shanti. He went with me to the airport. And I said, I have a plan. Let's see if it works. So he and I went into the cafe and we sat down at a table and we had yogurt drinks. And then I said, okay, I'm going to go. I'll be back in a few minutes. And he said, what do you mean? I said, just you stay here. I'll be back in a few minutes. So I went and I had arranged a time to meet the representative from the book fair. And we went to the customs locker on the other side of your check-in through customs and not immigration, through customs where they check your bags. So I went on the other side and I got my bag of Bhagavad Gitas. So I was already through customs. So I'm sitting, I'm waiting, I'm looking. Yep, he left. So I had gone through a line specifically on that end, like on the 20th line. So I went over to the first line and I went out and I said, oh my God, I left something in the cafe. And I got my bag. It was in a bag, my bag of 12 Bhagavad Gitas. So they said, okay. And I went out to the cafe and Ananta Shanti's sitting there and I'm sitting here. I put down my bag and we talked and I finished drinking my kefir. And I said, okay, highball, see ya. And I left. And so did my bag. My bag was left. And then I went back through line number 20 and I walked through. And the customs guy said, wait, where are you going? I said, I forgot something in the cafe. I had to go get it. He said, oh, okay, go ahead. So he saw me with no bag. Guy in line number 1 saw me with a bag. Guy in line 20 saw me with no bag again. So, and Ananta Shanti, you know, got the books and walked out of the airport with them. So, I mean, Krishna just gave us so many opportunities that you'd think, how the hell did that happen? How did that happen? How did that work? But it worked because Krishna and Prabhupada wanted it to work. And it was phenomenal. And there was... Just looking for a second. One thing about Ananta Shanti, this man was so bold. He was so brave. He was so bold. He did not... Prabhupada say in a tape once, talking about non-devotees, and he said, they'll eat anything, damn. So he said damn, so I could say damn too, I hope. I mean, he was so damn bold and brave that he would do anything. I mean, it was amazing. And he was like resilient. He was so, He was like, you know, like water off a duck's back or something. It was just, it was amazing. And he was in trouble with the KGB basically from the beginning. And it kept getting worse. And his Krishna consciousness kept growing and expanding. He had more and more trouble. But of course he did, because it was being more and more known what was happening and who was doing a lot of it and who was, you know, who started all the trouble. Of course, they didn't blame Prabhupada. They couldn't blame Prabhupada. They blamed him. And it was just unbelievable what he did and the risks he took. And he was a real charismatic guy. He was a real charismatic guy, and he was a real intense guy. And everybody who met him liked him. They may have liked him up close, they may have liked him from a distance, but they liked him and they respected him. And when he said things, I mean, he was heavy in a potent Krishna conscious way, not nasty heavy, but intensely heavy with Krishna consciousness. He was a member, when I first met him, he was a member of an institute, unofficially a member. He wasn't enrolled in that institute, but it was a parapsychological institute. And he made so many devotees out of that institute, because the Soviets were really into, and they probably still are, maybe more than ever, but they were really into psychic power and psychic manipulation. I mean, it was scary. It was pretty scary, some of the stuff they were into. And there was a lady, a Georgian lady, Juna. That's the only name I ever heard, Juna, her first name. And she was like the biggest parapsychologist in the Soviet Union. And she was like this with the KGB. And I mean, America was small time compared to this, they look at it too. Even if America was shocked when President Reagan said, before he undertakes anything major, he consults with his astrologer. And it was like, oh my God. The Americans couldn't believe it. But the Soviets were full on into parapsychology. And Anantashanti was, what do you call that? Monitoring a class, I think, like in the university. He was doing something like that, where he wasn't enrolled, but he, you know, had a lot of influence there. Audit, yeah. And so he had a lot of influence. And so many devotees came from there. And there were devotees that, I mean, when we moved here, that was in 1991, there were Namhata centers in 61 cities throughout the Soviet Union. And that's from, you know, the Baltic countries to Siberia to the Far East, right across the strait to Japan, up north, down south. I mean, there were devotees everywhere. Now, I mean, who knows how many devotees and how many centers there are. So he was really an amazing person in Anantashanti. We would see some of these books, like Mandakini said, where people would copy books, or if you had access to a photocopier, you were like, everybody wanted to be your friend. Because if you worked in an office where there was a photocopier, you were really a desirable person to know. And we would see books that the pages would be worn thin on the side from turning the pages, because so many people read that book. It was amazing. One day Jai Doida Maharaj called me from London, from Soho Street, and said, there's a Russian girl who just came here and said she wants to be a devotee. And so, you know, because we're old friends and knowing about our work in the Soviet Union, I said, well, let me talk to her. So she spoke perfect English, and she was a translator in Russia. And I said to Jai Doida Maharaj, we got to get her here. But, you know, she had married an English guy, and that marriage didn't work out. So Did we smuggle her?
Yeah, with my passport.
My wife was so helpful. She always let me use her passport to smuggle Soviets into Sweden.
In the car and you ran immediately to England. Oh.
I kind of figured. If not, so we went to England and picked her up and brought her back to Sweden on Hari Pooja's passport. And she translated, because we got a translation of Bhagavad Gita from Russia that was, again, a horrendous translation. she retranslated Bhagavad Gita, and that is this, that we printed in a size appropriate for sticking under your arm, in your pocket, or in your belt. If you'd like to see it. Pardon? I like that one. Yeah. So pass that one around. That was a softbound volume. This is a hardbound volume. I think this one was printed in Bombay. And we, in the front, you know where it says,
84.
Says Bhaktivedanta Book Trust, Moscow, Leningrad, Calcutta, Bombay, New Delhi. So we distanced ourselves from it. And this is the big, yeah. I got this other stuff here though. We did one other thing. Again, we took advantage of whatever we could do. I met a guy in New York. Met a guy in New York called his name was Valery Kuharitz. He owned a Russian language bookstore. And really nice guy, married to a French lady. And he said, I'll help you get stuff into Russia, which is what everybody said. Excuse me. He said he had a list of 2,000 libraries, institutes, museums, that kind of Soviet institution all over the country. So he gave us that list, Dumrakesh and me. We went to Paris, because what we did is we bought so many different kinds of envelopes, airmail envelopes. And I back up. We printed the introduction to Russian Bhagavad Gita on onion skin paper, so very, very thin. If you'd fold up a regular two-page letter, it would be as thick as the introduction to Bhagavad Gita. It's exactly what the introduction is here. But we printed special on this onion skin paper. So we went and we addressed 2,000 envelopes to go. I mean, we had little kids doing it in the Gurukula and putting stamps on. And we implicated everybody. And we would take these, we'd have Swedish envelopes, Danish envelopes, Finnish envelopes, and then we got French envelopes. And we would go, and Dumrakesh and I stayed for 2 weeks in Paris, meeting all these different, going to all these different Soviet institutions and giving them Russian Bhagavad Gita, and going, finding all the different post offices in and around Paris and dropping off these. So they would have different stamps, different dates, different, so they would look different. And we sent in 2,000 of these from these like four countries in Europe. And in the front, it had an address of the Bhaktivedanta Library, Calcutta and Stockholm. And we got thousands of letters back from people who got that introduction to Bhagavad Gita in the mail, came across it somewhere from someone, and wrote to us interested in Krishna consciousness. It was amazing. Ajay Dharan in Calcutta used to send me bundles of letters that they received in Calcutta, and then we'd write them back from Sweden. Interesting story. We made our committee to free Soviet Hare Krishnas, which you may have heard of, and we made it in Sweden, and we had on one day, I don't remember the date, we had a simultaneous, actually this it should be first. This is a report that Hari Pooja and I prepared on the persecution, I forget the name, the persecution of the Hare Krishna movement in the USSR. And we sent this to different Soviet embassies, and we also sent it to like Amnesty International, USSR news briefs, all these different organizations that worked on behalf of prisoners of conscience in the Soviet Union. And what is so funny, one day the KGB called in Premavati, who's one of the main movers and shakers from the old days in Moscow and still is. They called her in and they said, "What is this?" And they held up this report to her. And she said, "I don't know. Could I see it?" And she said she had never seen it before, because what we did is we documented all the imprisoned devotees. We got pictures smuggled out of them, pictures of them smuggled out of the country. We got their biographies and their information, sometimes pictures of the prison camp or the psychiatric hospital where they were imprisoned. And this is all in this report. And we'd showed this to Amnesty International and other of these human rights activists, and they couldn't believe it because it was so well documented. But just somehow or other, Krishna pulled everything together there to get the information and for us to do it in the West. And I'd go sometimes where there were meetings and conferences of these human rights activists, and there was one very famous Soviet dissident, Vladimir Bukovsky, who got kicked out of the Soviet Union. He lived in England. And I went and met him in England, and he was really a nice guy. And then I went to this conference, I think, in Switzerland. And I went and we talked, and I said, "I just wanted to show you one of, there's a word in Russian, samizdat. It means underground published literature." That was all going on in those days because there was nothing good to read. So somebody'd get a book and they'd photocopy it. So I showed him this book. I said, "This is one of our samizdat publications." And he looked at it. He said, "My God, I don't believe it." He said, "When we print samizdat, our books have no covers. You have a hardbound cover. You've got gold stamping on it, and you've got a page ribbon in it." He said, I can't believe it. I've never seen something like this samizdat from, and you could see it's not first class printing, if you will, like printed in the West, but the devotees made friends with a guy who worked in a, more than one guy, but worked in a printing press, and at night he would print Bhagavad Gita's. I mean, and they're bound, they're stitch bound. I mean, gold stamping. I mean, so, you know, it really impressed and gained the respect of these people. I think both the dissidents as well as the government, it's like, holy cow, look at what they've pulled off. You know, right under our noses, you know. So we made this committee to free Soviet Hare Krishna. We did this report, and we had one day, I think it was 26 different cities. We had simultaneous demonstrations outside the Soviet embassy or consulate, whatever was there, and had banners, "Mr. Gorbachev, peace begins at home. Please free the Soviet Hare Krishnas." We had information to hand out. We got newspaper articles all over the world. And we did the same thing in Delhi, where I was, let me back up, Reykjavik, Iceland. As a result of, especially book publication, but devotees were getting bold. They were having programs and with, you know, hundreds of people coming. And that brings me to another story, back going backwards. Harikesh and I went to, we organized, me from England, him from Switzerland, to meet up in Moscow. And we were going to go on a vacation tour of like four different cities. One of those cities was Riga in the Baltic Republic of Latvia. And so we met up in Moscow, and the next day we flew to Riga. I'll save some details because it's just, I mean, it was kind of doomed to failure, but it really wasn't failure. It was really, Prabhupada turns things around. What's apparently a failure becomes a great success. So we arrived in Riga and we went to this, we walked from our hotel to this program. And there was a devotee, Ram Bhakta. He was a bald, ethnically German Latvian. He was a bus driver who, on his bus route, had a tape recorder and a Hare Krishna mantra cassette playing, so every passenger in his bus every day heard the Hare Krishna mantra. Some of the things these devotees came up with way back then was amazing. And Hare Krishna and I came out of our hotel and we spotted him in his Lada, which is the old-fashioned Soviet car. And we looked and he had white sheets on the front seat and white sheets on the back seat, like they do in India, you know, so the VIPs, they don't touch the car seat. And we said, oh my God, we're going to get, you know, in trouble. They're going to, no, because what he did is we were walking, and at walking speed, he was following with his car. He was next to us in his car going, come on in. He's like, get out of here. Get away from us, you know. So we got to this program, and it was like we pulled up, we walked up, and we said, oh, my God, this is the house of Soviet culture. They don't want us in there doing religious stuff. And there's the devotees had a friend, and she was the director of this Soviet House of Culture, and she liked the devotees. So she said, use our hall. So we walked, we went in, and there were a dozen or so devotees, and it was on the second floor. And so the first thing I did when we walked in is I walked over to the window and went, too far to jump. And because it's just everything was like indicating, because the whole way walking there, we kept saying, we shouldn't go. No, we shouldn't go. We kept walking. This is really stupid to go. And we kept walking. We really shouldn't go. We're going to get busted. We're going to get in trouble. And we kept walking. The KGB is going to bust in. We kept walking. Next thing you know, we're in this room and I look out the window. I go, oh my God. And so we sat down. After a little bit, we sat down. And the devotees had made three of these cushions, bright red felt. One for Hare Krishna, one for me, and one for Ananta Shanti, who came from Moscow to join us there. So it's like, oh my God, we're sitting on these, you know, fancy VIP cushions. We're going to get in trouble. So we're chanting, and I closed my eyes. I didn't want to see anything. I just closed my eyes, and we're chanting, and everybody's chanting. We have this rip-roaring kirtan. And all I kept hearing was the door closing, and the door closing, and the door closing. And then finally, at one point, I opened my eyes, and I said, oh, my God. And I went like this, 10, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60. There were over 200 people in the hall. And that's a surefire recipe to get busted, with so many people knowing. So I closed my eyes again, and I thought, you know, it's too far to jump. And then all of a sudden, we hear the door slam and boots. You know, I mean, you could hear heels, big shoes, on the floor. And I opened my eyes and I said words I can't use in the temple room. And I said, oh my God, we're screwed. And sure enough, there were policemen and there were three guys in three-piece suits. So the first thing I did, I put my hands down and lifted up and kicked the cushion out from under me because I didn't want to be sitting on a cushion when these guys start asking questions and giving orders. And then those two guys, it's those two. They're on cushions, see? I don't have a cushion. I'm just a little guy. So they said, they were speaking in Russian, calling out, and the devotees kept chanting. And I said to Ananta Shanti, I said, what are they saying? He said, they're saying, stop chanting. He said, what should we do? I said, stop chanting. You know, the devotees were just continuing chanting. They were oblivious to the KGB being there. And so we stopped chanting. And then they started talking. And then they said, the only word I recognized, two words were, give me your documents. Because you always have to have your passport in the country, wherever you go. And I don't know if that's the same thing now, but it used to be. I mean, strictly. You had to have your internal passport. And so they, a couple of the policemen started collecting. And the one flashiest dressing KGB man came up to me and said, you know, Vasha document. Give me your documents. And I said, my passport's at the hotel. He says, oh, you're American? I said, yes. And he said, and that like blew his mind. He was so freaked out. He didn't come because two Americans were there. He came because Anantashanti was coming from Moscow and organizing this program. That like threw such a wrench in his works. It was unbelievable. He was clueless. He had no idea what to do with us. And and when he went to Hare Krishna, he said, your documents. I said, he's an American too. And, you know, it may blew his mind, one, and then two really blew his mind. So then he said, come with me. And he took us in a room outside. And I think I forgot an umbrella for some reason. I don't know why I had an umbrella. But I went back. I said, can I go get my umbrella? He said, yes. So I walked in to get my umbrella, and all the devotees were quiet, and they were handing in. And then all of a sudden, Ram Bhakta started chanting. The German, Latvian bus driver. His voice is like this. So he started leading kirtan like that. And the whole room was chanting, and the devotees were pounding on the floor. And that fancy dressed KGB guy came in, and he asked in Russian, what is this? What is this? Stop! I said, and the devotees stopped. So he told me, get out of here. Because, you know, by me going in, you know, they started chanting again. So then he kept us. He was asking us questions. We told him we were here on vacation. Suddenly he said, you're going back to your hotel. So he said, okay. So he took, and he had said to me a couple of times, you speak Russian? I said, no, I don't speak Russian. He said, you speak Russian? I said, no, I don't speak Russian. And I didn't say, Yanni Gavari Uparuski, I don't speak Russian. I said, no, I don't speak Russian. And so we get in this van, and he's there, and another KGB guy in the back with us, and a driver. So driver takes off, and it must have been, I don't know when it was, what season, but it was cold. I mean, it's cold quite often there, even though it might be. So it's cold. So I said, tapped the driver on the shoulder, and I said, Zakraytsya, pajosta, close the window. And the KGB guy turned around and he goes, you do speak Russian! And I said, no, I don't. So then he took us back to our hotel, and he took us down into the office with our interest/KGB representative. And she said, what did he say? No, she said, you have violated the trust of the USSR. And you can't say much to her. You're there. She's got our passports. And they said, well, we're really sorry. We didn't mean to. She said, all right, go to your rooms and we'll talk with you in the morning. It's like, yes, Mom. And so we went to our rooms, and we were like freaking out, not knowing what, you know. I guess that was. But we weren't selling books yet. I don't know. There was one time, I don't remember from when, but there was a